This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the show. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Alice Jovich from Bluffdale, Texas, and you are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 19th, episode 1304, brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday morning, the Thursday 1 week from today is Thanksgiving.
Yes, Thanksgiving, the day we all gorge ourselves.
That's right. It's the beginning of the holiday season, a lot going on. So I can't believe that it's the I can't believe it's the end of the year already. You know, it's like, oh, my God, we're going to be in 2016 soon.
I know. I can remember being a kid and thinking that I'd never make it to year 2000. And now here we are, and it's 2016 almost.
I know. Well, we are glad to have you here. Of course, Alice is here the third Thursday of every month. We're talking about trail riding stuff, and she's been doing this for quite a while. Of course, I think probably, I bet probably a majority of our listeners are not competitors, but are actually trail riders. So we're so glad that we can talk about this. And I don't know, does Jennifer have an On Today show planned?
I do.
Go ahead.
On today's North American Trail Ride Conference episode, Annette Griffin is going to tell us about her spotted draft horse and what challenges may or may not come with competing a heavy horse. And then Heather Grace tells us about the Great Distance Derby. That sounds like a good time. And Dusty McCord is going to give us the farrier's perspective. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. Well, We are in what's really, you're winding down your season for the NATRC. But you know what? People keep trail riding all winter long and keep doing all different kinds of things with their horses all winter. And we're lucky here in Florida because we can just do whatever we want all year long.
Well, yeah, in Texas too. We're fortunate to have really nice weather most of the time. So, you know, we have a bad day here and there, but most of us will keep riding. And now that I live in a place where I have 350 acres out my front door, I plan to ride all the time.
Oh, that's nice. Even if it snows, you can ride there.
If I want to. Then I'll probably, when it snows, I'll probably just stay in and watch it snow.
Yeah. You don't get a whole lot of snow in where you are in Texas, right?
Well, it depends on the year. Yeah. Last year, we had quite a bit. The year we had the Super Bowl, we had a whole bunch. So it was 2010 or 11, whenever that was. We had a bunch of snow that year. Most of the time, it's just ice, though.
Well, I know a bunch of our listeners from around the country had some bad weather yesterday, lost power, and we're thinking about you guys and had some wicked weather. So we hope that you're all better. And I know there's another snowstorm coming in. So we're thinking about you here in Florida when we're 80 degrees yesterday, 85.
Oh, so. Thinking about us. And yeah, that's so kind. Thank
yeah,
you so much.
No problem. Yeah. No problem. I'm very generous that way, by the way.
Yeah. Think about us while you're smugly smiling from your Florida home.
So what have you been up to this last month? I know you finished up your season. So as the season went, how'd it go?
The season was really good. We had our last competition on November. Was this the first full weekend in November? So I guess that was like the 6th, 7th, and 8th. And my horse had a really good year. He's going to finish up in first place in our region in competitive pleasure, which was really exciting because I just set out to have fun and go to all the rides. And, you know, and then it ended up being a successful year on top of just having a good time, which I think is, for me, the key. If I don't have any goals, and I'm just going out to ride and have a good time, that I don't get myself all wound up about the competition, and I have fun, and then we also do well. And then we did a couple of out-of-region rides. We went to Missouri, and then we went to Nebraska, and he may end up either first or second in the nation, too. So.
Oh, wow.
I know. I'm waiting to find out. They haven't added up all the scores yet.
I got the right co-host.
So. Oh, well, thanks. I don't know. I've had a lot of bad years to get to this one good year. So.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we all do that.
And it's the horse. I mean, he's an amazing athlete, and I had no idea when I...
What is he again?
He's half Pasifino and half Arab.
Oh, there's an interesting combination.
Yeah, he was an accident. I bought him from a friend who raises Pasifinos, and she had gotten into thinking she wanted to have Arabians and do endurance, and she stood a stallion. Well, one day, said stallion and said mare found each other across a crowded pasture, and she really didn't think that anything was going to come of it because it was in the fall. It was kind of late, and 11 months later, there he was. He was born on September 12th of 2001, and so she named him Liberty, which ended up, was a coincidence when I met him because that was the town I'm from in Liberty, Missouri. And so we was like, oh, that's meant to be. I need that horse. So
half Pasifino, half Arab. Does that mean it does a little Pasifino thing really fast?
No, he only gates when he's angry. And usually it's like if he gets overcollected and I won't let him canter, but he really wants to, he'll throw a few steps in. But I've never been able to get him to do it on purpose. And it always feels like when he starts to gate, it feels like the next thing that's going to happen would not be good.
Jennifer, all right, we have a thing on the show here where we take combinations like that, Pasifino and Arab, and we make up a new name.
Yeah.
What are we going to come up here with that? We have a Paradian.
A designer breed name.
A Paradian.
Yeah.
We got to get Pasifino.
Pasifino.
How about Arabafino?
Arabafino, yeah.
Yeah, that
Arabafino.
Would be
Arabafino. Oh, that's almost a phobia in there. I like that one, Arabafino.
Yeah. Or is it Arabafino or Arabafino? Arabafino.
That sounds
I like
good.
Arabafino.
Arabafino. Yeah, I'm going with that. Okay, write that down. But put that on our list of wacky names we've come up with over the years. Arabafino.
Well, what you get with a half Arab, half Pasifino is a very emotional, intelligent horse.
Yeah, that's and, right. It goes really fast.
Yeah, I told myself for years that if I'd wanted a quarter horse, I should have bought a quarter horse. But I wouldn't trade him for anything.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, he's 14. But yeah, he's 14 now, but it's funny because
he can't be a real big guy then. Pasifinos aren't real big either.
He's probably 14.3 at the withers. I mean, his withers are kind of sharp, but he's And when I was bigger before I lost weight, I felt kind of guilty riding him, but now the pictures I feel okay. So, but he always did okay. I mean, he never seemed to really mind. So.
Well, I'm glad that it's working out for your what do we name him again, Jennifer?
Arabafino.
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 Arabafino. Yeah, I like that. Okay, yeah. We'll go with that. Well, you also had a board meeting for the NATRC recently, and it was the national board meeting in Denver, Colorado. Was it snowing when you got there?
No, it had snowed the weekend before. And there was still snow on the ground, and it snowed the day after I left. But I managed to slip in between snowstorms.
So how'd that go? Was it a good board meeting?
When I was a kid, my dad used to talk about going to the board meetings at the bank that he worked at. And I remember thinking that he meant B-O-R-E-D.
Yes.
No, actually, as far as board meetings go, it was fine. At the last board meeting of the year, we typically vote on rule changes that we've been discussing during the year. So we did some of that. And there were some, management things from some rides. Some people had some disagreements. So we had to make some decisions about those things. And those always end with somebody being happy and somebody being unhappy, unfortunately. But as far as board meetings go, it was okay. We set some plans for next year, and we saw some people who had been on the board a long time off the board. We had a small little champagne celebration at the end, and it was fine. I love that group of people is really awesome to spend time with. So it's kind of an excuse to see some of your best friends and get some work done.
Very good. What else did we, anything else we needed to catch up on?
I don't know. Let's see. Oh, our next board meeting. No, our national convention is coming up in the spring. Well, in February, we're going to actually have it at Reno in conjunction with the Endurance Association. The
AERC. Really?
Yeah. So that's going to be really fun. You know, Reno, I've never been to Reno, so I'm pretty excited about that. And they're going to have a ton of vendors because since we have the two groups together, we can put our, you know, put our collective membership together and we'll have more people. And then the talks they give will cross over to appeal to, you know, the general trail rider and the distance rider. So that should be a whole lot of fun.
Geez, you're going to have to do a show there. I mean, the AERC is a sponsor and the NATRC is a sponsor. You guys are going to have to come by. You'll have to find Karen Chatton.
There you go.
You're just going to have to do a show from there.
I'll have to look at actually when I'm going to be there. May be on the show day, actually, come to think of
it. Well, there you go. Drag Karen over, and I'm sure she's coming. She lives right near Reno, so she's going to be within a day trip easy of Reno, I believe. So, yeah, I'm sure she'll be there.
Yeah, because it's Thursday. We'll be there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and I'm sure we'll be there because that's the third weekend. So, yeah, or the third. Yeah, that'll be great. It's a good idea.
There you go.
I'm glad I thought of that.
I would think about coming out to Reno, except we have something that weekend. But that would be fun. I've never been to Reno either. I've been to Vegas bunches of times, but
I've never been to Nevada.
Oh, really?
Well, I've never been. That's one state I haven't been to yet.
Well, it's a lot of desert and interspersed with brothels and casinos.
Wow!
And then
awesome.
You have Nevada. And I'm sure I'm going to get some emails right now. They're typing those up right now.
We apologize in advance to all of our listeners in the state of Nevada.
Sorry, Karen.
Send your hate mail too.
Sorry, Karen. But they know it's true. Well, we are going to talk about the seven things. Before we get to our first guest, did you want to do the list or did you want to go ahead and get to our have Jennifer get to our first guest?
No, let's go ahead and do the list.
All right. Let's do that.
So seven things that you should teach your trail horse. And the first one is that you should teach your horse to load willingly. I said it's a bad thing. It's a very bad thing when your horse won't get in the trailer because if you can't get to the trail, you can't really trail ride. And then once you get to the trail and you've ridden, if you can't get back, that's even worse. So
Jennifer's horse does this so well, and she did buy the quarter horse, by the way. So,
Doesn't load when he's on way home.
No, she does. her horse Beaker. She points him in the trailer. He gets in by himself, and then when it's time to get out of the trailer, she just unties him in the front, comes around the back, and says and clicks to him, and he backs out and does it all by himself, both directions.
Yeah, my horse is a really good loader too. In fact, and I have a baby horse that's 2.5. He is such a good loader that if I leave the trailer door open while I'm loading the other horses, I will come back to find the empty stall full of a horse because he wants to go. He doesn't want to be left at home.
I don't know if you saw the video, but Scooter, on the other hand, my driving pony, a little Hackney, we have names for him. He will get on the trailer just fine. He'll walk right on the trailer. Getting out of the trailer is a different story. He will not back out. That's just not going to happen. So we turn him around because he's so tiny. We just turn him around, and he stands there, and he looks at the edge, which is 6 inches off the ground, for about an hour. And then he decides if he wants to jump off or not. And then he takes this flying leap in the air and lands, you know, spread eagle out of the trailer. That's his mode of getting in and out of the trailer.
Yeah. My horse will turn around if you let him, but usually I just tell him no, and he'll stand.
Do you have a ramp or a step down?
I have a step down.
Yeah,
I've never had a ramp. My friend that I board with, she used to have a trailer with a ramp, and my old horse just he wanted to jump over it. He didn't like the ramp at all, and I don't know that I would turn a trailer down that had a ramp. It's just not something I've ever had.
Yeah, we've had both. There are some horses that just don't like ramps, and then there's some horses that don't like the steps. I mean, it just depends on the horse, I think.
Right. And it's important that it's not about just loading in your trailer. They need to be good at loading in any trailer that they're pointed toward, because sometimes your trailer isn't available for whatever reason.
Right. Or it's an emergency or whatever.
Exactly.
Right. Well, let's do one more and we'll get to our guest, and then we'll intersperse them throughout the show.
Sure. Well, number two is to teach your horse to go where you point him. As a good trail horse will go willingly over obstacles, around rocks, down canyons, and especially through water. So this is important because if you ever have gotten to a place where, you know, especially water, that it just doesn't look right to the horse. I mean, you could be there all day. I know the first trail horse I had, I went out across a creek and she was okay. But then coming back, for whatever reason, she wouldn't go in the water. And I tried to get off and I was going to lead her. And that was a really bad idea. And then some people came along and tried to help me. And that was an even worse idea. So, you know, and that's not just for water, but they need to be able to negotiate whatever you tell them to do. Because otherwise, you know, it's dangerous for you. It's dangerous for them. And, you know, they need to listen to their leader.
There's certain situations where getting help is a good thing and certain situations where getting help is a bad thing. And most of the times in the situation like you're in, it just exasperates the problem. Or when you're having trouble loading a horse, there's always about 10 people who want to come over and help, which just exasperates the problem. So, yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
I usually, when I see people having trouble like loading or with an obstacle, I usually wait until they start looking around for help. Or, you know, if I do offer help, I'll be like, hey, if you need or want some help, let me know.
Yes. And that's the way to do it. Not just come in and start whacking the horse on the butt. Not the good way to do it.
No. That was the time my horse didn't want to cross water. I was trying to lead her and someone came up behind her and started spanking her. And she tried to leap across this really wide creek and she flattened me. And that could have been really bad.
We bought a Percheron at an auction once. It was a draft horse sale in Pennsylvania. He was only 18 months and he stood about 17 and a half hands. So he was a really big, lanky boy at that point. I mean, he grew out to be a full size, you know, 18 and a half hand Percheron. But he would not get in our little trailer because, you know, he was going, I'm not going to fit in there. And we weren't too sure he was, actually. So, I mean, it was a pretty good size 7 foot tall trailer, but, you know, he's a Percheron that stayed 17 and a half hands. And we played with that for a while, trying to be very patient. You know, he's a big guy. And this Amishman comes walking by and says, want some help? And we're like, at that point, we were like, sure. He takes the horse, turns him around, walks him right in the trailer. It's like, okay, well, that's, we just wasted
an
hour.
That's like our whole pickle jar thing. We had him loosened up.
Yeah, we had him loosened up.
Absolutely.
It had nothing to do with that guy's skills. Nothing.
Well, speaking of Percherons, let's talk to our first guest.
All right. Our first guest is Annette Griffin, and she has been competing her horse, Tally, in NATRC in the novice division. She competed some last season and then also this season, but she has decided after much contemplation to take her horse into the open division, which is faster and farther. And it took a lot of convincing to convince her, a lot of people telling her that it was going to work well. But I'll have Annette tell you why she finally decided to try Tally and open. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Well, so, before we do that, though, we got to tell everybody about our horse.
Oh, that's true.
Because that's what makes this story.
Absolutely. You're right. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah. So tell us about your horse. What makes your horse so different?
Well, Tally is she's a spotted draft. So she's actually 3/4 Percheron and 1/4 paint. She stands at 17.1, so a little smaller than the one you were trying to get in a trailer.
Uh-huh.
But
big enough.
She's definitely not that small horse. So
is she big boned like the Percheron, or did she get some of the paint in there too?
She's a big girl. She is big boned. She's definitely draft looking, but when you look at her, she's very proportionate. So she did get a little bit of her mom's paint side, a little bit of the refinement. But her hooves, she wears a size 4 shoe. So she's a big girl.
Now, Jennifer, we like to make up names when we get these weird crossbreeds together, and we already named Alice's horse this morning, and we came up with a name for this. What was it, Jennifer?
He is a Painteron.
A Painteron, yes. So
that's, I like it.
Isn't that good? That beats spotted that's drafts really kind of good. Boring. When you say you have a Painteron, that sounds cool.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. She just went up in coolness, man.
We'll have to create a new breed award.
Yeah, that's right. New breed award.
You know, yeah. I'm always calling. Yeah, I'm calling other ones. You know, the spotted Arabians. You know, the Pentavians. And now I have a Painteron.
Hey, write that down, a Pentabian. Yeah. Write that down too, Jennifer. Add that to our list. We're writing a book.
Good.
All right, go ahead. I had to throw that in. By the way, I love Percherons. It's still my favorite breed. They're so, you know, we just talked about earlier, we started a list and we just talked about you have to have a horse that will do what you tell them to do. And for the most part, Percherons will just do that, right?
I love riding Tally, and she's kind of intimidating to some people because she is such a big mover. And I had a lot of reservations whenever I first decided to try her out in Natrac because I didn't know how it would work out. But she loves to move down the trail, and the reason I've decided to, she's had a lot of really good luck in Natrac. In fact, I don't think she's placed less than second in competition. So it's worked out really, really well for her.
Well, everything else that's a jump or an obstacle, she just steps over. It's like everybody else is jumping and leaping, and she's just going, doo, 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 doo.
That's actually the truth. They have done a lot.
So, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
No.
Ask me a question. Okay. So what are some of the caveats that people have given you about bringing Tally into open from novice?
My reservation has always been because of her being big boned and heavy, you know, heavy footfalls and stuff, that it was going to be too hard on her joints. But everyone that competes around me has said, the girl needs to move up because she really, her slow trot is 9.2 miles an hour. And so she can move on down the trail. And it's when I let her do that, she is happy. Her ears are flopping, her lip is, you know, flopping. And she's just as happy as can be going down the trail. And so at the last competition, which was actually going to be her retirement competition because I wasn't going to compete her again, I decided to let her go. And we ended up riding the first day most of the trail with the open riders at the open pace. And I've never had that horse happier on the trail. And when we came into our PNRs, her PNRs were lower than they are when we're in novice, and I'm actually having to hold her back. And our PNRs were a 10 and a 1, which Alex can explain what 10 and 1 is. But, I mean, her metabolics and everything were the same as what an open Arabian was. So
better than a lot of open Arabians.
Yeah. And so when I got back to camp, everyone's like, you just need to move her into open. Just do it. Just do it. And I'm like, no. And then the second day, we started off and we went pretty fast. I'm like, you know what? I think everyone else is right. I think she could handle it. So we're going to see.
So
we're going to try it.
Because of her size, though, you're trying to take some steps to make sure that she's in shape. So what
Absolutely.
Is it? What is it she's doing right now to get herself legged up for this competition?
Actually, what I have her doing right now is I have her at a facility that is doing aquasize. So she's in water on a treadmill, which is going to help build the long, lean muscle. And then they also put her on the round equisizer so that she gets that pounding motion and can build up from there too. But the aquasizer, the time that she spends in there is equal to hours worth of long trail work and just helping to get lean muscle going in, because I really need her to be a lean, mean draft machine so that I'm not going to have to worry so much about that heavy bone, you know, the heavy structure. And it's just going to kind of help her get those joints and muscles where they need to be able to handle the longer distance. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how this plays out for us.
And actually, I think, it, you know, what we found owning Percherons over the years is that their legs could take a lot. You know, the legs weren't the problem. It was always the feet. And, you know, the draft horse people we know, we were at the World Percheron Congress last year, and the one thing they always said was the legs and joints are usually not a problem, even with the heavy horses. It's the feet that break down first, and that's always the issue. We had to make sure that the feet were so well taken care of.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I do, you know, typically my horses are barefoot, but I did put shoes with pads on Callie because of those heavy footfalls, and I have them all the way around on all four because those Percheron feet, I mean, when they...
Hey, Alice, that only cost her 500 bucks right there.
No, she's got a real... She lives way out in the country, too, and she's got a really awesome farrier.
Yeah, because... did he have keg shoes that were that big, or did he have to make them?
He had shoes, but he has to stretch the shoes out, but her pads, he cuts, and he makes her pads himself.
Yeah, he would have to.
That has probably been the best thing that I did, was to put those shoes with pads just to protect her. Because as you know, those feet are some heavy, heavy footfalls, and you pound those and, you know, combined with rocks and different stuff over that many miles, that's brutal. So, we've done rocks and all kinds of stuff, and so far she's been perfectly sound, no feet issues or anything. So that's going to be the one thing that I'd really, really keep a close eye on, because, you know, no feet, no horse.
Are you worried about when it gets hot? You know, because Texas doesn't always stay the temperature it is now.
Yes. That is going to be another thing, an issue that I'm going to really kind of watch. I'm going to compete her a lot in the spring and in fall. And then we'll kind of play summer, you know, the late spring, summer, you know, competitions by ear. I'll see how she's doing. You know, by then it may be a non-issue because, you know, we've been doing this and she's in condition and she's used to the heat. But if I see that it's starting to tax, you know, tax her a little bit, hey, we're out for the summer. That's just managing, you know, that's just part of what this sport is, you know, you manage your ride, you manage your horse, and, you do what you need to do.
Hey, you know what? We're going to see the first Percheron at Tevis next year.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
We have a 5-year plan. You know, you and Alana and me can all go to Tevis the same year.
There you go. There you go.
And I said I would be happy to go to Tevis with y'all as a crew.
her horse could be the pack horse.
I'm not sure that the trail at Tevis is wide enough for Tally.
Yeah, we would be the one that would be on the news being airlifted out, you know, because we fell off the side because we couldn't fit or something.
More likely, you'd be stuck between two trees, just wedged in there.
We'd be like Winnie the Pooh in the honey tree. No one else could get by, so.
Right?
That's funny.
Sorry, I just had a complete mental image. Real quick, before Annette goes, she has a story from the summer about the heat and what a trooper Tally really is. We went trail riding this summer, and Tally and another, and with Annette and another friend, had an unfortunate heat incident.
Oh yeah,
heat related incident.
Yes, we did. You know that whole, you know, manage your horse and everything. Well, you know, we went out for an hour and a half ride. So, you know, when you go on an hour and a half ride, you don't take a lot of water or anything because you're just going out and back. And one of those things, you know, we're following the signs, but the signs kept pointing us out. And, you know, we didn't have our GPS because we were just going to go on this little short loop. And, you know, what was it, 6-7 hours later, we finally made our way back. But the horses were so tired. You know, one fiasco after the other, after the other, after the other, they got way overheated. My friend got overheated. And, in fact, we had been laughing the day before about the show Naked and Afraid and, you know, mouthing about how good we could do. And I would always say, well, I could save anyone as long as I had shoes. If they drop me out of the helicopter with no shoes, I'm out. So worst comes to worst, my friend gets dehydrated and she goes, I'm the weakest link. I'm going to naked and afraid. I'm a failure. And I'm like, no, we're going to get out of here. I have shoes on. And the horses were exhausted. We found water. One of the horses decided he was done. He wasn't going any further. So we ended up putting all of the tack off of the other horse on top of Tally. My friend is holding on to Tally's tail, trying to walk because she was just getting disoriented. And I'm like, Tally, you can do this. This is what you're made for, girl. So she's pulling my friend, lugging the tack, and we finally made it out. And we're like, okay, that was fun. Let's not do that again. So
Tally, the pickup truck.
That's right. That's it. It's like, come on, Tally, you can do this. This is what you're made for, girlfriend. She's like, I don't think so.
So what's the moral of that story? Bring water and bring a GPS.
Bring a GPS. Make sure you get your shoes on. Bring a GPS, water.
And maybe look at a map ahead of time. Yeah.
Well, that's another story.
Those kind of things would make, those kind of things would make way too much sense. And, what's a good story in that?
That's right. Well, thank you, Annette. We appreciate you joining us.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
And good luck.
Have a good day.
Good luck in the open division with your big one.
All right. Well, I'll let you know how it goes.
Okay. I'll look. You should start what do we call her? A painter on?
A
painter on registry. So you can
be
the head of that. All right. Good. We'll have one.
All right. All right.
All right. Talk to you later.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's fun.
I thought we'd have her back on next month so she could tell us how it went.
Oh, good. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
See if Tally made it. And how many other horses and people she had to carry along the way.
Yeah, sure.
Just because I'm big, you think I can carry everything. Well, let's head to your next guest.
All right. Our next guest is Heather Grace, and she is the founder of the Great Distance Derby, which is a mileage tracking program, game, and community for equestrians of any discipline, breed, or age, anywhere. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning. How are you, Alice and Glenn?
I'm great. How about you, Glenn?
I have never heard of this. So this is new for me, the Great Distance Derby.
That's great. Well, thanks for having me on.
Well, so tell us a little bit about what gave you the idea to start it.
Sure. Well, the Great Distance Derby actually is started a couple years ago out in Nebraska. It started as just the Distance Derby, and I was invited to participate in 2013. I had just gotten my first horse in 2012 in the fall, and I thought it would be a great way to motivate me to ride and to connect with other riders. I live in Michigan, so we don't have the great weather you guys have there in Texas. And we have 6 months of winter, so you need all the motivation you can get. So I began tracking my mileage, and you do that by, I use a smartphone app. So it's a free app that you can download on your smartphone, and I have just a battery extender that I use on my smartphone, and I can... I use something called Sports Tracker. I found that to be the most reliable, but there's dozens to choose from.
Right.
I do a little bit more backcountry than other folks, but then you can also use an independent GPS system, which a lot of folks like that too, especially if they don't have smartphones. So every time you ride, all you do is hit start on your app or your GPS system. You stick it either in your saddlebags or on you. And then at the end of your ride, you go ahead and hit stop. You'll be able to see where you've ridden, how far you've ridden, what kind of elevation you've ridden. And all you have to do is take the number of miles that you rode and enter it into an online form that we provide. That form then immediately tallies it to a leaderboard so you can see what your total mileage is for the year. And you also see where equestrians from all over, from Alaska, from Oregon, Michigan, Texas, we have teams in Canada, you can see how their mileage is going as well. And some people use that as a way to compete or motivate. And we really encourage people to set their own goals. For people who, you know, ride just very casually, 100 miles a year might be what they are aiming for. Other people who ride more regularly might try for 500. And people who maybe are retired or have a lot of free time or are complete horse addicts and spend all of their free time, like me, riding, they might try to hit 1,000 for the year. But each team is one horse and one rider. So you can see, if you have multiple horses, how many miles you're doing on each of them, and really get a better sense of what you're riding and what each of your horses are riding and how far you guys have come.
So what are some of the goals? I mean, like, what are some of the records that people have set over the couple of years? I mean, like, I haven't looked recently, but I know people were getting real excited when they got up over 500. So I didn't know, like, how many miles
sure.
a max had been, like, say, for the last 2 years.
Sure. Well, you know, it really depends on who the horse people are. If you're a recreational rider, your mileage goal, again, is going to be probably a little bit lower. But what we try to do than, say, a professional person who's riding multiple horses and training other people. So we try really hard in the Derby. While we're tracking mileage, the goal here, our motto is smiles and miles. So while we're tracking like the most simple form, you really are focused on the journey. And because of that, we have other things. You know, the leaderboard is one to the Derby. We have an online webpage for each team that has a photo. And you're encouraged to use that page as kind of a diary or a journal and track, you know, maybe you're trying a new discipline for the first time. Maybe you're a trail rider and you're going to try to do something called competitive mounted orienteering, where it's like a scavenger hunt. Or maybe you're going to try to do your first endurance ride. Many people try cowboy mounted shooting, dressage, drills. There's just so much that we can do on our horses. And we really encourage, while we're tracking miles, it's really about the fun and the journey during that time. So each of you guys, each team has a diary that is online, and people can comment and encourage you, and you can make plans. And those who like to use Facebook and connect at a deeper level, we have a well-managed private Facebook group. And I say private because we don't let anybody in other than the teams that are there for that year. And those are the only folks that can see the posts. And that way people can post, you know, where they're riding safely and invite one another to ride with them. And we use that only for the purposes of motivating, encouraging, and congratulating each other. So all of us that are horse addicts have had that moment where you're talking about your horse for the 100th time to your husband or to your friend who doesn't have a horse, and they just go blank in the face. Well, this is a community that really encourages you to talk horse all the time. We don't complain about the weather. We don't want to hear about, you know, work. All we want to hear about is your journey with your horses for this year in the Derby. And it's a really great opportunity to get motivated and connect with people and see trails from different terrain that you would never ever see unless you were connected to these folks. A little bit deeper than, say, larger Facebook groups where, yeah, you see kind of like people are going here, people are going there. You see the photos from, you know, all the kind of natural highlights or wonders that we see on horseback, but you don't get to build a relationship with those folks. We have about 150 teams each year, some more active than others. And those are people that you get to see their posts and interact with them on the regular day-to-day basis. So I get to experience what it's like to ride in Alaska, even though I live in Michigan, or in Oregon or Texas or North Carolina. And I've gotten to meet Tevis competitors from Illinois who met me in Shawnee, and we did a ride there together. So it's really a great opportunity to connect on a deeper level and to use the mileage as just a means to improve your relationship with your horse and get out and meet other equestrians and experience different things.
So I know there's also like kind of a friendly competition between the states, because that was how I got involved with it. Was Annette, our first guest, used to live in Nebraska, and she said she needed us to, her Texas friends to join so we could beat all her Nebraska friends. So
exactly.
She didn't want them to show her up.
Well, and that's part of the fun of it, is that we're looking, we have 26 states involved in the Distance Derby, and most of them are from Michigan, which is where I'm from. However, we're always looking to, what we want is like 10 teams from each state, and for those teams to have some friendly playoffs or competitions. We have great gear, so that gear is the Great Distance Derby, and it covers everybody. But for when we get a lot of folks from each state, we personalize that gear. So that is from Texas or Ohio or Alaska. And we really want to have a lot of fun with folks, and we do. We already do group rides in Illinois, Tennessee, Ohio, Michigan, obviously. We have people in Montana who ride together, people in Alaska who ride together, people from all sorts of states that have kind of like a group that ride together. But we really like more folks from Texas, because we know, you know, folks down south can really show us Northerners how it's done. We're like horseback riders light. and it's exciting. It's really exciting and a lot of fun. And there's really not a whole, I don't know any program that is like this. Because in addition to tracking and having a community and that game or competition element, we don't allow any drama. So the minute, you know, folks kind of get derailed, we encourage them gently three times. And then if they can't get, you know, with the fun that we're having, we proudly, you know, encourage them to find something that's a better match for them. Because there's lots of trail clubs, lots of organizations, tons of ways to like earn ribbons and prizes. And we're just not about that. We are all about improving your relationship and the amount of time you spend in the saddle or cart with your horse. And then making sure that we're encouraging one another and having fun. Because as we get older, I think we take ourselves far too seriously. And we really are the luckiest people in the world. We have horses and we get to ride. And there's nothing but, you know, gratitude when we finally get in the saddle after, you know, doing our work, taking care of children, taking care of family. The last thing we want to do is make any horse event or horse opportunity that we offer anything but fun, because the horses pick up on that and we spread it. So we're all about positivity and really just smiling and miling along.
Well, I am on the website and I'm taking a look at the leaderboard for 2015. And we got Team 83 is MTRA. There's not really a name there. They're leading the way at 2,400 miles, which is a lot in 1 year. Mm-hmm. And then I love that the fact that Mule Gal is coming in second with 2,009 miles. And then I went down further in the list and I saw team number 7 was Running Reckless Sport Horses. And I figure they have 1,173 mm-hmm. miles because their horses wouldn't stop. They just have no brakes.
That's the great part.
Yeah, there's no stop, and they just keep going, running reckless, no stopping.
You can drive too, Glenn.
Yeah,
they
I see that. You
driving.
Know, the American Driving Society has a miles to drive program as well, and it's run the same way. You just keep track of your mileage, and it's kind of on the honor system. You keep track of your mileage, and that is to encourage those of us that drive to get out more. Which I'm guilty of not doing. So I get it.
We have a lot of drivers, Glenn. You should join up. We have a couple in California, some in Oregon, a bunch in Michigan. We're always looking for more drivers.
Well, you know, it's starting to become popular now. Endurance driving is starting to become more popular.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is,
we have
a
great
time.
Group based out of Wisconsin. Yeah.
Yes, and the Midwest has a lot more endurance driving. Indiana, Illinois. In that area, they have endurance drivers, and there's a lot of space to drive, too. That's the other thing
that you have
to have. But, yeah, that's cool.
Well, and to give people some perspective, we have our MVPs for last year, because we do rankings and different awards and that type of thing, but we just try to keep people focused on the partnership with their horses. But our most valuable players last year was a family of three. It's a mom and her two special need daughters. And they had set personal goals that they had met themselves to ride. The mom's in the 400 mileage range this year. The daughters are in the 200 and 300 mile range. But we are family friendly and really encourage people. Now, those are our MVPs. Our last year's winner is an endurance rider. You know, she was our overall person. But we also rank people differently throughout the year. So you see the main leaderboard here, but we re-rank that at the end of the year. So people who are 60 and over get ranked together. People who are 21 and younger get ranked together. People who are on one horse or multiple horses get ranked together. So we kind of even out that leaderboard, and you get to see where you place at the end of the year, kind of with your most like peers. And that gives people to win the opportunity to win in multiple ways. Because we want, most of our people are really recreational riders, but we go from families with special needs to Tevis completers. So
I love the names of the groups. That's what I'm having fun with, because there's one of the names of the groups is Spotted Grays Anything But Bays. I like that one. Less Gabbin, More Riding. Jennifer would go for that one. There's just some fun names in here. Chicken Girls.
They must have chicken. We're in Team 110, the Distance Darlings.
I saw them. Distance Darlings. Yeah, you're on that list.
And then I think Maggie's, my daughter's, is Team Arrow, number 92, Team Arrow.
Because her horses.
And you guys are doing well. Alice, how's your year going?
Oh, it's gone really well. My horse is taking a break right now, but I'm riding another horse. So, you know, he's having a little rest before he starts the next season.
And Jamie would have a place to go here. There's a team for her, Short Girls. So there we go. We can add her to that team.
That's one of our Tevis completers, actually. Short Girls is based out of Wyoming. That's Sue. And she completed the Tevis 10 times successfully.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Wow. Here's another one. Life is Better on Friday. They're probably government workers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Those are our gated folks, and they're out of Michigan here, out of West Michigan. So we have a huge group of trail riders from West Michigan, which is great. So it really, you know, and we have the opportunity to grow, too, unlike other programs. We have Canadian teams and U.S. teams right now, but we'd really love to see people from all over the globe and see what it's like for them to ride, because what you don't see here is our Facebook group, because it's private, and that's where people post most pictures from nearly all of their rides and descriptions of what they're doing. And so it's a great opportunity to see, you know, I've learned how to competitive mountain orienteering for the first time this year because of this group. We have people who did endurance riding for the first time, which, you know, as a novice is 15 miles, and then 25 miles is called a limited distance, and then endurance hits at 50 miles all in one shot.
So Heather,
lots of opportunity to learn.
Sorry to interrupt, but we have to wrap.
Oh, sure.
But I wanted you to tell us real quick how people can sign up for next year, because I know that we're in the middle of that right now.
Sure. Well, they can sign up between now and January 1st, and they go to www.thegreatdistancederby.blogspot.com. They can just Google search the Great Distance Derby, and they'll pick that up. And then we're also on Facebook, and you will see me on Facebook as Eden Grace. Eden is the name of my Fjord quarter horse cross. And since she got me into this crazy world,
a third opportunity this morning. We like to come up with names for these weird breeds. We've come up with two so far. So it's a Fjord.
Oh, tell me. Yes.
Okay. A Fjord quarter horse.
Fjord quarter horse.
Oh, that's tough.
Uh-huh.
Jennifer, you're the expert here. Fjord quarter horse. Oh,
Corfjord.
This might be my favorite part of the interview, guys.
Fjord. Fjord's tough. That's a tough one.
I got a Courtauld.
Right?
A Courtauld?
A Courtauld.
Okay, we'll go with that. Yeah, we can go with Courtauld.
All right. Well, she'll be happy. Well, that's how people can then connect with us to get into the Facebook.
Or a Forder. A Forder. Could be a Forder.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
A Forder.
A Forder horse.
A Porter.
That almost sounds like, you know, a Porter horse sounds like you're swearing. We shouldn't do Porter horse.
I like Porter horse.
Porter horse.
Porter horse. I like that, actually. That kind of it rolls off the tongue. All right, Jennifer, write that one down. That's three today.
Wow.
We're doing a book.
You guys are doing great.
Yeah, we got three today. All right, good. Well, thank you so much. We have the website. We'll post it on our Facebook page, and we'll also put it in our show notes for today's show. Thanks for stopping by.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for letting us share.
All right, bye, Heather. Well, there you go. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Like I said, Annette's the one who put us onto that because she wanted us to beat all her Nebraska friends. It was very important to her that we beat her Nebraska friends.
There
and
you
then,
go.
And then she had the nerve to have both a knee replacement and another surgery and didn't even ride for half the year.
Well, you know, I can see why this became a thing in Nebraska because it just seems like you can ride forever in Nebraska and not get anywhere. So it's a big state to ride around. I can see why. Well, let's take a break for a song. And I got one for you today. This is our friend out of Switzerland. Her name is Fleur Magali, and I thought it would be appropriate for the NATRC Day to do her song called Find Your Way, and that really fits our first guest who got lost. So we're going to play that, and we'll be back. We have more guests for you lined up today. We're going to be talking a little bit about shoeing and farriering and all of that coming up.
Spread your wings and fly. Jump into the sky. For the very first time, you're gonna leave your sorrows behind. As long as you stand on your feet, no one can pull you down, 'cause you are stronger than you know. Even when you feel alone, as long as the sun rises every day, you're gonna find your way. You're gonna find your way. Walk in your own shoes. Choose. Be true to who you are, and then you will go far.
Wasn't that pretty? I love that song. It's Fleur Magali. She is out of Switzerland. You can find her. Her first name is spelled F-L-E-U-R, and then it's Magali, just like it's spelled. And you can find her on iTunes, or she has a website as well where you can find more of her music. It's just absolutely beautiful. She also has a horse video you're going to want to see, so head on over to her website. She is riding through the Swiss Alps. She actually grew up in a little town in the Alps, and it's like on the side of a mountain. It's just what you would picture right out of a fairy tale, and that's where she grew up. And she actually did some hang gliding above the town, which was really cool in the video. So you'll find that all at FleurMagali.com. Well, while we're waiting for our next guest, we had started a list earlier in the show, the seven things you need to teach your trail horse.
Right.
And you want to do number three?
Sure. I go back to my list here. All right. Number three on the list was come back to neutral. And Jen seems to have left a note on this one that says Glenn should pay attention. Is there a story here?
Scooter is the entire story there. Neutral is neutral is not his best thing.
Neutral is not his best thing.
No,
okay.
he really, you know, he has this little bit of a bolting issue. We call them BBs. They used to be large bolts, and now we're down to baby bolts. We've decreased the size of the bolts and the length of the bolts. So that's good. That's all good, unless, of course, you're heading straight into traffic. But that's not good. But
yeah.
He's getting better about it, but that's why she put that there.
Okay, so well, a good trail horse will keep a cool head no matter what is happening around him. Whether there's a mare in season, a barking dog, or a small-scale mutiny among the other horses, a good trail horse will not overreact. I mean, I know like in NATRC, a lot of times we'll say if a horse is nervous or there's a group of nervous horses, that they're feeding off each other. And so if you know that your horse feeds off of other horses, you try really hard not to put it next to a horse that's going to cause a problem.
Oh, and it's always a bizarre problem. We were at Dr. Wendy and I went up to the American Driving Society annual meeting, and it was in Aiken, South Carolina. And there were 40 carriages there, probably 40, 50 carriages there. And we were going out for a drive. We were going to drive through town. They had a parade. They had the streets closed off. There were, you know, hundreds of people watching, and it was a parade. And it was Aiken, South Carolina, which is absolutely beautiful. Is it Aiken, North Carolina? One of the Carolinas. But anyway, we went to Aiken, and we're starting out from this park where we were getting all the carriages ready, and I was on the carriage with Wendy and her single horse. There was some four-in-hands of minis ahead of us and some pairs and just all kinds of combinations that headed out ahead of us. Well, the road, Alice, you're gonna cringe. Mm-hmm. The road right outside the park into town, right along the way was a thoroughbred breeding farm on both sides of the road. The barn and the house was on one side, and all the baby thoroughbreds and all the expensive ones were on the other side. Well, they happened to have just been bringing them from the barn to the other side of the road when all these carriages come up. And the thoroughbreds all just freaked out. Several of them got loose. A couple of them in the paddocks crashed through the three-board fences.
Oh, no.
They were running around the roads, which, of course, freaked out the six-in-hand team of minis that was leading the parade. And they freaked out. There were carriages going everywhere. There were carriages overturned. There were horses everywhere. So, yes, I've seen this happen even in driving where it's a complete disaster.
Wow.
Yeah, that whole thing was a mess. There were, you know, thoroughbreds hurt, and I'm sure they weren't the cheap ones, right? They're never the $1,000 thoroughbreds when that situation happens. And, of course, we took a different route the next day in our drive. We did not go past
Well, and I know carriages in general, even if it hadn't been thoroughbreds, carriages a lot of times will freak out horses that aren't used to carriages.
Yes.
And minis will freak out horses that aren't used to minis.
Minis just, and minis will freak out at anything sometimes. So.
That's true. Yeah.
It was a mess. All right, let's get to our next guest.
All right, our next guest is Dusty McCord, and he is a farrier who was trained by the Liberated Horsemanship, and I am lucky enough that he has just become my farrier where I moved, and so I'm looking forward to getting to know him better. But welcome, Dusty.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Hey, before you guys get started, Dusty, is there anybody named Dusty outside of Texas? It seems like you have to be from Texas.
I don't know. It could be a possibility, you know. You know, George Strait did, you know, I know he's from Texas, but he did make a movie stealing my name, you know.
That's true. That is true. But he's from Texas, so it kind of counts.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you've got a point there then, yeah.
Yeah.
So that bears asking, is Dusty a nickname or is that your given name?
That is a nickname.
Okay.
Dustin is my middle name.
Okay. And what's your first
Matthew's
name?
My first.
Matthew. Okay. Well, see, those are both good names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Dusty's cooler.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Dusty's much cooler.
I agree.
Yeah.
Way cooler.
If you're going to be a cool farrier, you got to be named Dusty and not, you know, something boring. So.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So, I understand that you were trained by Liberated Horsemanship, and they are they're the group that worked with the Houston Police Department to take their horses barefoot. Can you tell
Correct.
Me a little bit about how that came to happen?
Well, as I was told when I was at the school, and that is, they kept losing shoes and everything, and they had such a high, you know, amount that they would have to pay even the farrier every time that they'd lose a shoe, and then the feet were deteriorating, and they can't. Gregory Sokolowski was one of the ones that initiated looking into going barefoot and just training the officers, and so they first went to Martha Olivio, then Jamie Jackson got a hold of them and Liberated Horsemanship, and they like Liberated's program a lot. It's the same trim and everything as Jamie Jackson's. And so they started going with them to all their gateway clinics and learning more about it and training their officers. And now they get to take care of their own horses, and they have one of the largest cavalry mounts there is.
That's really interesting.
And they're all barefoot.
Can you tell
us? It saves them a lot of money.
Oh, I bet it does. But can you tell us a little bit about what makes Jamie Jackson's trim and the Liberated Horsemanship trim, what makes it special from the way other people trim horses?
It's completely based off the Mustangs in the Great Basin area. It's all about how they wear their hoofs and trimming to the anatomy of the foot. You know, there are some methods out there that do like a square-toed or four-point trim, and not that it doesn't work for some horses, but if you look at the coffin bone and the inner anatomy, it's not shaped like a square. And you also look at some horses in the wild, and they will have more than 4 points, or some of them only have 3 points of contact. So it's really based off of trimming to the inner anatomy and going off your hard sole plane and putting the Mustang roll on, which is very important, not just for breakover, but it helps keep a tight white line and keeps your hoof more concave, and to get concavity and sole thickness, you need a tight connection. So it's based off of those principles, and Jamie and Liberated go a little bit further than just the trim, as they look at the whole horse. They look at, you know, stuff with like the Paddock Paradise, where you set up a track system for your horse if you can do it, or keeping them outside in more of a natural condition. They look at feeding and the overall health of the horse, which all is a part of it.
So just for people who might not know, can you explain what you mean by like a 4-point trim or a 3-point trim, or like the different points of contact?
Yeah. Some horses, you know, especially like say they're pigeon toed or something, they might wear more to the outside, you know, in between the center of the hoof and the toe quarter. And they will have a point in between there. And then the two heels will come into contact, and the 4-point trim, and that, you know, they'll have the two spots before you have the arc of the toe, and those are called the toe pillars, and they'll leave those in contact. They'll make the quarters in between the toe quarters and the heel passive, and they'll make the toe passive. And not all horses are passive in those areas, and some have more points of contact, and others they have less.
Okay. So I know, how does this trim benefit people who are doing distance riding or trail riding specifically? I'm sure there's some ways that, I mean, I'm sure it benefits all horses, but when trail riders are looking at trimming versus shoeing, or even, you know, shoeing too, they're looking at what the horse is going to be the most comfortable on over the long distance and the most terrain. So how does this method of trimming and then later shoeing help the trail rider?
It helps the trail rider because you're going to have a healthier horse. You have more circulation. When you put a steel or aluminum shoe, you cut off about 50 to 60% of circulation up to about the knee. You also have all the shock waves from the shoe going up the leg, which can cause joint issues. And the lack of circulation, any toxins that are trying to be expelled through the feet or extra thrush or the contraction that's caused because it causes the hoof to be locked into a fixed position, get trapped in the hoof, or can cause heel pain from the heels crushing or the heels getting closer together. And then what I'm going to talk about with the bars in a little bit, it also, because the hoof distorts from being shod for an extended period of time. I'm not talking about the people that put them on for a race and then take them off after they're done and give the hoof some time to heal. I'm talking about the people that will do it like on a 6-week basis all the time. The hoof will distort. There are all kinds of pictures out there that I could show. As well as you can look at a shod hoof versus a barefoot hoof. The heels are much fuller. They're wider. The frog is thicker, more robust, so it gives more cushion to the foot. Also, if you're on a hot surface, that metal can heat up, and then they really have no relief. Whereas if their feet get hot, they can lift their foot off, and the vascular system of the hoof will cool it. But it makes for a stronger hoof because it's able to work. It's able to flex, expand. It gets the full circulation. They've also done studies to where they show that a heart rate of a horse that's shod will be higher than one that is barefoot. So in some cases, if you have a horse that may have a higher heart rate and then he's shod, on top of that, I know at some of those checkpoints, they check that and that could disqualify you. But having a stronger foot and healthier horse is going to help you in the long run. It's also going to improve your chances of not having any vet bills or soundness problems. And they show that horses that are shod, you know, you're taking away about half their life because of circulation issues. And it also, you can boot as well. And that's where Cavallo boots or, you know, Easy Care or whatever brand you decide you like come into play. And those can give you added traction. Those can give your horse comfort and shock absorption while still letting the hoof flex and do its normal mechanism. So in the long run, it helps you in performance. It helps you keep your vet costs lower. They actually have studies showing that barefoot horses have less vet bills.
Oh, that's always
because
a good, that's
they're healthier. I think so. I know I don't like to pay the vet if I don't have to.
Yeah, nobody does.
Tell me about having a stronger foot. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so I wanted to hear more about the bars, about, because I know that was something we discovered with my horses, is that their bars had been, you know, their bars were overgrown, and I was unfamiliar with what needed to happen there. So maybe tell us a little bit about what the bar is and what it's supposed to do and how your trim helps maintain that part of the hoof.
The bars are an important role because if you don't have any, you can crush the heels. You can cause it to overexpand or they also can cause lots of problems. They're an extension of the heel. It's all, you know, part of the hoof capsule, but sometimes they get out of position or out of function. Either they've been trimmed wrong for a period of time, so they'll lay over on the sole and they can cause undue pressure. Or if they hadn't been trimmed in a long time, or you have an unhealthy foot, say a recessed frog, and you have real contracted heels, those bars start to jam up and they can actually go up into the hoof capsule. Cheryl Henderson out of the Oregon School of Natural Hoof Trimming has cadaver studies, and she shows where the bars are actually jammed up into the hoof capsule. And there are horses that are diagnosed with a lot of heel pain, or their frogs never seem to get bigger and fuller, even being barefoot, and people will go back to shoeing when the bars are actually ingrowing into the frog's corium, which is just below the frog, and it will pinch that, and that's a very sensitive structure. like I showed you when I trimmed out part of the frog there, you saw that there was bar underneath pushing up against it, and you saw all the bruising,
right,
and you saw old dry blood that was there. I mean, nothing bled. The horses licked and chewed. They were comfortable. They were eye-rolling. And it was great to be able to show you that, because you got to see how much this can kind of cause a problem. It's kind of like if you have an ingrown toenail, you know, it'll cause pain. And then when you take it away, you've got like instant relief. The bars are meant to play a role in support, but not a primary role in support, more like a secondary or a third role in support. And what they do is they do allow some traction. They do allow for some weight bearing. But if they're trimmed where they're laying over and thinned out on the sole, they're not going to be able to function as properly. They help expand the hoof by, if they're up, straight, and down, and terminating at the widest part of the foot where they should be. You shouldn't have bar all the way to the apex of the foot. But if they're terminating at the middle of the foot and they're standing straight up and down, the pressure from the ground, wouldn't the dirt or rocks or whatever fills the hoof guts, so it helps push against that and push against the lateral cartilages that are inside the hoof capsule to expand the hoof and allow for the blood to go up the leg and dissipate shock through, you could say, like a hydraulic system with the blood. They allow for a healthier hoof when you trim them properly. Sorry, I'm getting a little tongue-tied. When you trim them properly and you allow for them to be able to be in their right function, just like anything else, if it's not in function, it's not going to perform to the best of its ability.
Well, that makes sense. Now, I know in a couple, well, next week, we're going to put on some shoes onto one of my horses and one of my friend's horses,
mm-hmm,
that you called them hoofets. Yep. And I had never heard of these before. So tell us a little bit about the hoofets and why they're a better shoeing alternative to regular steel shoes.
I love the hoofets. As I showed you in the picture, hoofets are a composite shoe. They're completely clear all the way through. They have great tread, but they're also a little thicker than your average shoe. And I found out about them when I was shoeing some horses in the stockyards, carriage horses to be exact. And they were doing that because the borium and other methods of trying to keep the steel shoe from slipping on the concrete or asphalt was tearing up the cobblestone, and also they were going through shoes they were wearing straight through them within like 3 to 4 weeks, even with borium, and it is just a lot of stress on the hoof and the shock on the leg, and they would still slip even with borium and that. But when he found these, he wasn't slipping anymore. They were having less soreness issues because their shock absorption, because it's kind of like nailing on a sneaker or a hoof boot onto the hoof. And they're a composite shoe material, so when the hoof steps down, it actually flexes with the hoof, and it actually forms and shapes to that foot as versus the other way around. And like if the left heel hits with one of those shoes, just the left heel's going to move, which would be what a barefoot foot would do. And as I showed you in the picture of the hoof, where I'd been putting them on for 2 years straight, because the lady kind of tricked me. In the initial agreement, it was, we're still going to take breaks even from these because of the nail holes. And I was sure in my mind that they were still going to cause some kind of problem because you were adding something to the hoof. But she would rotate them off of the other horses, and I wasn't paying attention to the one. And I go, you know, I think you got by with keeping these on a little longer than we thought. And she goes, yeah, we haven't taken them off. And the hoof looked just like a barefoot hoof. The frog was big and full, and the heels were wide, and the toe wasn't stretched. There was no distortion of the foot. So I've become a huge fan of these. And the nice thing about them is to trim the foot. You can do the barefoot trim with them. You don't have to trim the foot flat because the hoof will suck up to the the shoe will suck up to the hoof. And not only is there shock dissipation, but it allows for the foot to flex. The shoe will even flex, but it's still rigid enough to give some support. And when you're done trimming and nailing, And I would go ahead and nail, mainly because if you glue them on, you're kind of fixing the foot to the shoe, and the glue can only move so much before it breaks. So it's still a better option, but you can use less nails. You can use 4 nails or 5 nails instead of going all the way to the widest part or putting it all the way to the heel. And when you're done nailing, you just trim the excess off. So it's a custom fit every time you put these shoes on.
That's cool. That's really neat. I sent a photo over to Glenn if he wanted to put it up on the page.
Got it. Yeah, awesome. I got it.
Yeah, they... Mm-hmm. So. Do you have the picture of that hoof still?
I might. I can send that to him too. Yeah, he had sent me some photos.
You can put
You
could definitely put up a side-by-side comparison of a barefoot hoof and that hoof, and you can see how much bigger the frog is and how much wider the heels are. And you can see the horse has nice concavity, and other than the hoof wall is a little overgrown because I hadn't trimmed it yet in that picture, and that there are a few nail holes, there's not much difference. And it makes for a lot healthier hoof. Then you could pull a picture off of a horse that's been shod with steel shoes for an extended period of time, and you can see how the hoof starts to take an oval type of shape and kind of run forward, and how the frog gets smaller and how the heels get closer together. And it's no wonder that when that happens, it starts to compress the lateral cartilages and soft tissues inside the hoof, and they start to have heel pain. So it makes for a lot better option because the hoof can act in a more appropriate mechanism by using the hoofage or being booted or being a barefoot hoof. Stronger hoof, healthier hoof, less soundness problems. Healthier, happier horse.
So, Dusty, I'm curious, do you have a particular favorite boot?
I like the Cavallos. The Cavallos are the Renegades. I really do. I especially like Cavallo because of all the extra educational opportunities and webinars that they have. I'm not a boot salesman of any type. I don't carry any with me. But I've been real impressed with the Cavallo and Renegades, mainly because Renegades just seems to be a great company. I've seen on their boards on Facebook and other places where people have called and been like, my horse outgrew this size boot, or I lost it, or it got sucked off, or it broke. And they just sent them another pair. And that the customer service just really impressed me, and they seem to hold up very well. And Cavallo, they're just a great company. And Carol Herder, you know, she's very nice. She continues her education.
Well, I got to tell you, we are sponsored by both Renegade and Cavallo. So in a matter of disclosure, I wanted to mention that. But I use Cavallo boots for driving, for my driving pony. We all, you know, our horses are barefoot, and we use the Cavallo boots for both of them. When we're out in the road, you know, I'll use all 4 or just the front 2. It depends on where we're going and what we're doing. And I will say this too, we have the 12-hour radio.
You were kind of breaking up there. I heard you were using them for your driving ponies, but the rest of it was kind of
We use it for the driving ponies and our riding horses. We use the Cavallo boots and love them, the Trek boots. And they are a sponsor of our radiothon coming up, and we'll be giving away six pairs of Cavallo boots on Cyber Monday. So look forward to that. That's coming up on Cyber Monday. We're also giving away a pair of Cavallo boots tomorrow for our Really Bad Ad segment. So get your ads in right now. That's worth $100.
How do you spell
awesome.
Hoof it? How is the Hoof It boot spelled? Like, what is the website for those shoes?
It's www.hoof, then there's a dash, like a minus sign, and then it.com.
Okay. And tell people how they could reach you if they happen to be in the Stephenville area and need a farrier, and if you happen to have, time to help them.
I'm pretty full at the moment, but... if I don't mind doing consultations or referring or asking any questions or doing markups to kind of help people understand their hoof, or I'm considering doing some more clinics again. But I have a Facebook page, McCord's Natural Hoof Trimming, and it's on Facebook, and you can find me, or my phone number is 214-783-0733. And also I have my email, which is McCordsHoofTrimming@yahoo.com. And McCords is spelled McCords.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm more than happy to take phone calls or answer emails or anything on Facebook as well.
Thank you, Dusty. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Y'all have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
So now we've determined it's redundant to say Dusty from Texas, because that's where they're all from.
Dusty, you look up Dusty and you get Texas.
You get Texas. It's in Wikipedia that way.
Gotcha.
So now that was a good that was an excellent conversation, and we've been, you know, had our horses barefoot for a while. I know it's becoming more of a thing, but I never thought about it for a police department because of what they have to, you know, put their horses through and on the hard surfaces that they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Houston Police Department, it's been several years ago, and they made big news when they did it. And I don't know. I think initially they used a lot of the Easy Care boots. I don't know if that's still the case or not. But, that was one of the big things that the barefoot movement people talked about, was how Houston had taken their department barefoot.
Now, Jennifer, you said on the Liberated Horsemanship site you found a Find a Farrier link.
Yes, they do have a link on their website, and we will put the link to the website on our show notes page, that you can find a practitioner on their website. And there's a pretty good variety of states that there are folks in it. Yeah.
Very good. Well, we never did finish our list. Maybe we'll finish it next month.
Yeah, we'll finish it next month.
We left off.
It's a cliffhanger.
We left off at, let me see here. We left off at come
at
back
neutral.
To neutral. Yeah, we yes. We left off at my pony bolting down the road is where we left
that's
off.
Right.
Yeah, that's how we can remember it.
We always do.
Yep. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. As I mentioned, tomorrow is Really Bad Ads Day, and we will be giving away a pair of those Cavallo boots. How nicely he tied that in. And I didn't set that up either. That was just happened. So we'll be giving a pair of those away tomorrow, and you're going to want to get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com and send them over today. We need them on Thursday for Friday's show. Just get on Craigslist, find yourself a really crappy Craigslist ad about a horse or a cow or anything in the farm department. We'll take anything in the farm department and send it over, and we just have a little fun reading them on Fridays. It's everybody's favorite day. So it's brought to you by EquityMFG.com.
Well, and real quick, we have a couple rides in the next 2 weeks.
Yes, go ahead.
We have two rides the same weekend. One is in Texas at Perry Haynes Ranch, called the Wayfarer at Perry Haynes. And that will be December, the first weekend. It's the weekend after Thanksgiving. Was it December 5th and 6th, 6th and 7th? I'm not looking at my calendar. It's the first weekend in December. And we have a big Christmas dinner, and it's a lot of fun. And there's electricity. And there are places in the bunkhouse to sleep. See, you could come to this ride, Glenn, because there's no...
Oh, you didn't mention anything about bathrooms. I'm sorry.
No, there's bathrooms.
Oh, okay.
There's bathrooms.
Good.
Like, yeah, right. Absolutely. We have bathrooms. And if it were summer, there's a swimming pool, too. But I don't think we'll be using that. It's going to be a little cold. And then there's also a ride in Florida the same weekend called Christmas in the Pines. And they are both that same weekend. So we kick off our ride year. And they actually had the first ride of the year last weekend. While the board was meeting in Denver. So there's already one ride under the belt for the year.
I'm assuming Christmas is in the Pines, must be in the Panhandle someplace.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, because that's where they actually have pines.
So well, then that's probably where it is.
That's where I guess, anyway. Well, and you can also find the NATRC at natrc.org is where you can find all the information if you want to give it a try. You know, New Year's is coming up. It's time to make those resolutions and what the heck, try something new, right?
That's right.
With your horses, so that would be terrific. You can also find the past episodes of the NATRC show on horsesinthemorning.com. Just search for NATRC. It'll bring up all of Alice's past shows. We've done a lot of them now, so you can find a lot of great information. And most of them aren't timely. You know, the information's good 2 years ago as it is today. You can find Horses in the Morning on Facebook and just search for Horses in the Morning. We post a lot of things there, including links to today's guests and things. And of course, the best way to listen to a recorded version of any of our shows is on the Horse Radio Network app. Just search for Horse Radio Network in the App Store on iOS or Android, and it's free, it's easy to use, and it has all 8 of our shows, including Horses in the Morning, on there. Well, thank you, Alice. You have a good Thanksgiving coming up.
We will. You too.
And we'll talk to you next month.
All right. Next month. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Say that again, because I can't find the closing music. Oh, there it is. Oh. Okay, I got it.
Got it.